From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. By the power of Grayskull, I am he, Anchorman Bill Curtis. And here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Great show for you today. Later on, we're going to be joined by design genius Jonathan Adler. He went from being a humble potter to a giant in the fashion and design world. Now, the only thing we know about throwing pots is what we saw in the movie Ghost. So our first question is, how do you get anything finished when Patrick Swayze keeps coming up and getting all handsy? I hope he leaves you alone. Well, you give us a call. The number is 1-888-924-8924. That's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Ursula.
Hello, Ursula. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I am fine. Where are you calling from?
Believe it or not, I'm calling from right across the street.
Peter!
Oh, my God!
Peter, she's been stalking you!
Oh, no! The call is coming from across the street. Doesn't happen.
Someone's in there.
Yeah, what do you do here in downtown Chicago?
I work in marketing. I work, actually, on the 14th floor of the building right across from the Chase Plaza.
Really? So you're peering down on us even as we speak?
No, mainly because you guys don't have any windows on that side of the building, I don't think.
And that's why, because we don't want people like you peering in.
Oh, too bad.
Welcome to the show, Ursula. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's a comedian recording his first comedy album, May 8th, at the Laugh Factory right here in Chicago, so you can go. It's Brian Babylon.
Hey, Ursula.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Awesome.
Next, it's a style columnist for the Washington Post. It's Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Ursula.
Hi, Roxanne.
Finally, it's a humorist and author most recently of The Baby Boom, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hi, Ursula.
Hi, P.J.
Ursula, welcome to our show. You're going to play Who's Bill? This time, Bill Curtis, of course, is going to recreate, three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Scorekeeper Emeritus Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. You ready to play?
I am ready.
All
thanks.
Right. For your first quote, here's an announcement that was heard over the PA at a Major League Baseball stadium this week.
For record-keeping purposes, today's official paid attendance is zero.
So where this week did they throw a baseball game and nobody came because they weren't allowed to?
In Baltimore,
yes. One of the many disquieting things to happen this week in Baltimore was a baseball game played without any fans. Major League Baseball was worried rioters in Baltimore would overrun the stadium. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Rays handed out free burning CVS bobbleheads in an attempt to lure rioters to their stadium.
And let me say something, as the blackest thing on this panel.
I think PJ has some
which
soul.
Which is a low bar.
Low bar.
Yeah. It's super easy. Yeah. Out of all that looting and cutting up that those rioters did, and that's different than the protesters who are really protesting some real stuff. Yeah. Well, I will say that. That's something real. Those rioters who are going for CVS and liquor stores, dude, that Sally Mae place is in Baltimore. Like, down the street, Sally Mae Financial.
Yeah.
Loot that place.
Yeah.
They got money.
Yeah, Sally Mae is the worst. Yeah. Loot them.
Like you say, there were all these peaceful protests in Baltimore for days, and then the riots happened. Everybody freaked out, and people only paid attention when they had to, like, keep away the fans at a baseball game. Everything was so weird. The sportscasters, this is true, they had to talk in hushed tones because the players could hear them. They were so polite and quiet.
It was like golf?
No, it was more like, it was like public radio. It was like, welcome to Ball Things Considered. Now, your next quote, Ursula, comes from President Obama talking about a new nominee running for president.
Apparently, some folks want to see a pot-smoking socialist in the White House. We could get a third Obama term after all.
Mr. Obama was joking at the White House Correspondents' Dinner about another pot-smoking socialist who announced he was running this week. Who?
Bernie Sanders?
Bernie Sanders, yes! the Vermont independent senator, a self-described socialist who demands we call him Bernie, announced that he was running for president this week. We have come a long way in this country. Anything's possible. We know that. I don't know if America is ready for a President Bernie.
No. No, he needs to, if he's going to do this for real, if he's serious, don't be talking smack, Bernie.
Yeah.
You got to rebrand yourself.
Really? Well, yeah. I don't know if you know this, but his whole brand, to use that phrase, is Bernie.
I get like, it.
Bernie.
I get where he was going with that, but yeah. If he wants to play with the big boys, you got to guss it up, Bernie.
So what would you do?
Well, we're going to supercuts first.
This is
that
true.
That would be a step in the right direction.
We're going to supercuts first.
Now the idea that people are excited about this, if only to have some excitement, the idea is that an avowed socialist in the race will pull Hillary to the left, right? So he'll stake out positions and attract support, and Hillary will have to say she agrees with him. This makes liberals happy. But why isn't it just as likely that she plays for the middle by walking over during a debate and punching the hippie? He's presenting himself for that purpose.
I know. That will pull a lot of people to the right. Like, hey, that was some good hippie punching.
Right.
I don't know.
She could get my vote.
Yeah, I can trust her. I like the way she punched that hippie. Yeah.
I can think of so many people I'd rather have her punch than Bernie.
Bill.
A long list.
Starting with Bill.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, here we go, Ursula. Here is your last quote.
Let's get ready to rumble.
That's the famous catchphrase of Boxing Hall of Famer Michael Buffer. He will be announcing what big fight this weekend?
Is it Pacquiao Mayweather?
It is Pacquiao Mayweather. What other fight could it be? This weekend we'll have what everybody is calling the fight of the century. That's great because it means we won't have to have another for 85 years. The fight between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao this weekend in Las Vegas is attracting so much attention that people scalp tickets for hundreds and hundreds of dollars just to see the weigh-in. Will the guy show up and stand on scales?
Oh, nice.
The New York Times, I am not kidding you, profiled the ring itself. That's right, the wood. They wrote a long story about the wood and canvas ring.
They interviewed it?
Well, yes, they did. The ring says it's excited, a little humbled, and hopes that its training will help it just stand there and not collapse.
And it said, I want to thank God for this opportunity.
Yeah. All blessings to God for being a boxing ring. Yeah. This fight is attracting a lot of interest because, you know, the promoters and the advertisers have managed to create one of those very profitable good versus evil storylines. Pacquiao is playing the good guy. He's very popular in the Philippines, and he's known for his charity. Mayweather is playing the evil guy because he is actually evil.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes, he
he's
is.
He's just he's just, in your world, you guys would call him eccentric. He's just urban eccentric. That's what we call that. That's called urban eccentric.
Wait. Being a jerk is urban eccentric?
No, his style, his panache.
No. He is the highest paid athlete in the world. He is going to earn more than $180 million, win or lose.
Woo, Mitt Romney. Woo, Mitt Romney. Yeah.
However, so
he's a small business, man.
His nickname is Money. Did you know Floyd Mayweather has his mouth guards custom made for him, including, depending on his mood, diamonds, bits of gold. This one will have a $100 bill in it, and they cost $25,000 each.
Do you know how many jobs that created to make that mouthpiece?
Mitt Romney! Do you know how stupid it is to have bits of diamond in your mouth guard?
But do you know how it feels, though?
No, I don't, Brian.
Ice cold, baby.
Well, Bill, how did Ursula do in our quiz?
Well, Ursula is Ursula from Chicago. What do we expect? She's perfect.
Well done, Ursula.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne, men try to, work out or get rich or maybe even be brave to attract women. But a story in Psychology Today says the best lovers are actually the guys who are what?
NPR panelists? I think
you will appreciate this, Brian. Let's let Roxanne get there.
Funny.
Yes! funny people are the best lovers. Funny men.
You know, that is like such a lie.
Now, wait a minute. Excuse me.
This is what women always say. What do I want in a man? I want him to be funny. Then you be funny. See where it gets you.
Yeah. According to a study at the University of Alberta, funny men are more likely to satisfy their partners, and their partners are more likely to initiate, as they say. We should point out that many of the studies we feature in the show are suspect. But this one is absolutely true.
Because, you know, funny people are givers.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
They're always in the mode of giving, you know?
We give laughs.
Laughs. Hugs.
Entertainment.
Yep. And, yep. And pillow talk.
Yep.
It's hilarious.
Are you a good pillow talker?
The best. I'm like, hey, I'm here all week.
After play.
Yeah.
After play.
Psychologist Gil Greengross explains, quote, people with a great sense of humor are attractive as mates and enjoy better mating success. This is true especially for men who use humor to attract mates. So, yeah, next time you take your pants off and your date starts laughing, don't feel bad. Keep going. It's working. Now, this isn't a total surprise, as PJ mentioned. Women always say they want a man with a good sense of humor. You know, someone really funny and charming like George Clooney or Fabio.
Right. Now, too sad to laugh for long, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
No, some jokes are like that.
Yeah.
Some men are like that.
We'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. Stamps.com helps businesses avoid time-consuming trips to the post office. With Stamps.com, you use your own computer and printer to print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, and then the mail carrier picks it up. No more wasting time going to that post office or wasting money on expensive postage meters. Right now, listeners of this very podcast can use the promo code WAIT, W-A-I-T, for a special offer, a no-risk trial plus a digital scale and free postage. So go over to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in W-A-I-T, WAIT. That's Stamps.com, and enter WAIT.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We are playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, PJ O'Rourke, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jamie from Ottawa, Canada.
Hey, Jamie from Ottawa. Don't have a lot of Canadian listeners. Nice to hear from you. What do you do there?
Well, I'm not a real Canadian. I'm a U.S. citizen, but I did become a Canadian citizen a month ago.
Oh, you did? Congratulations.
Thank you.
Or rather, should I say, go to hell, you traitor? I'm not sure how to deal with it. when you became Canadian, did you have to learn how to be Canadian? I mean, did you have to learn how to take on a more Canadian attitude toward things?
Well, I now let people pull out in front of me in traffic.
There you go. That's the first step. Well, welcome to our show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Jamie's topic?
Bill Mann to the rescue.
So the new Avengers movie is out this week, and millions of grown-ups will be leaving their kids at home alone to go see it. But this week we read about a real-life superhero, a vigilante out there doing good, someone who may not be an Avenger, but is still fighting the good fight. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Are you ready to play?
I am ready.
First, let's hear from Roxanne Roberts.
Have a pothole problem? Not in the small English town of Bury, where a local artist has come up with an arousing way to get the road hazards repaired. He paints giant penises around them. The potholes will be there for months, the anonymous street artist told Newsbeat. Quote, suddenly you see something amusing around it, everybody sees it, and either it gets reported or fixed. The city council is not amused, calling the large white outlines, quote, obscene, quote, stupid, and insulting. The artist, who the press have nicknamed Wanksy, is unrepentant and says his drawings are artistic expression. Quote, to be offended by that, you must be very prudish. And since you asked, the street penises last about 4 hours. Kidding, actually about a week or two, which is making the asphalt layers very jealous.
Wangsi, who's getting potholes fixed by doing obscene drawings right around them. Your next story about a new but not necessarily exciting superhero comes from Brian Babylon.
Sidewalks around the world are filled with smartphone zombies, and I'm here to clean our streets. That was a message painted on the side of the Apple store in Chicago's hip Bronzeville neighborhood. The message was signed, "The Brick Phone Bandit." Reports have been flooding in that people who walk down the street while texting have had their smartphones snatched by a middle-aged white male dressed in 1990s cross-color outfits. He then hands them a working old-school brick cell phone from the 90s, with a charger no less. According to Chicago detective Amy Schenker, the stolen phones are returned a week or so later with a note, "Keep your eyes on real life," and they're always signed, "The Brick Phone Bandit." So far, 14 people in Chicago have been victims of the bandit. His latest victim had their Apple Watch stolen and replaced with a sundial.
The Brick Phone Bandit haunting the streets of Chicago. Your last story of an unsung hero comes from P.J. O'Rourke.
Mulchman, the compost vigilante of Brattleboro, Vermont. Early Friday morning is garbage collection time in Brattleboro, which is probably the greenest, most organic town east of anywhere marijuana is legal. Most Brattleboro residents put their garbage out on Thursday night. That's when Mulchman strikes. In the wee hours, wearing a camper's headlamp, Mulchman tips over the waste bin and sorts through its contents. Everything that is biodegradable is then clumped on your doorstep or dumped through your mail slot or, if you've left your car unlocked, piled on your driver's seat. Mulchman believes in composting, believes in compulsory composting. It's on his anonymous website, www.rottingpile. Your compost pile should have a place, or I'll pile compost in your face. Police, this being Brattleboro, Vermont, are not investigating.
So here are your three choices. Which of these is the new anonymous vigilante out there striking blows for justice of some kind? Is it Wangsi, the street artist who gets potholes fixed by drawing rude phalluses on them so they have to be covered over? Is it the brick phone bandit who haunts the people who are easy to haunt because they're looking at their smartphones all the time? Or is it from PJ Mulchman of Brattleboro, Vermont, who's rooting through garbage to steal the combustibles and leaving a mess behind?
Well, I would like them all to be true.
They're all good.
Yeah, they're all good. I think I would go for Mulchman because I kind of dig Mulchman.
You're gonna go for Mulchman, PJ's story of
yeah.
the compost-minded vigilante of
yeah,
Brattleboro,
that sounds
Vermont.
Like Vermont.
It does sound very Vermonty. I will grant you that. Well, we spoke to somebody to bring you the real story.
For people that are visiting, they can take a picture with the infamous penises that he is drawing around the potholes.
That was Jay Brooks. She is the American representative for VisitManchester.com. She is talking about Wangsi, the pothole superhero who is haunting a nearby town in England. So because you're Canadian now,
yeah.
you understand that you've lost and you accept it. But thank you so much. You did earn a point for PJ for being very convincing, I think. Mulchman does sound very reasonable. All right. And we are so delighted you called us to play our game. And congratulations on your big change.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now the game where smart people are asked about dumb things. It's called Not My Job. Back when he was a student, Jonathan Adler was told he'd never make it as an artist and he should go be a lawyer or something. But Adler continued to make his pottery, and today his design empire includes 26 stores named for him all over the world. He's the most famous potter now since Harry, and we are delighted to have him with us. Jonathan Adler, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. For those people who don't know your work, can you describe it in a few words?
Yeah, I guess I call my work Modern American Glamour. It's about sort of modern design, rooted in American optimism, and always with a top note of glamour.
Is it true that you were, in fact, a design student at Rhode Island School of Design? You were taking classes there, and they said, give it up, you'll never amount to anything?
Totally. I had a very mean pottery teacher. I shouldn't name her on national radio, but I'll just
name her. Go for it.
Name her.
No, I'll just say this. Her name begins with J and ends in Acklin Rice. So any guesses?
What is the point of rising to your position of prominence if you can't be catty?
That's right.
Well, go on.
I was actually catty before any prominence I may or may not have.
Yeah, so the way I understand the story is you went to New York and you did, in fact, try to take her advice, if you want to call it that, and you tried to work in some non-pottery jobs, and it did not work out.
It did not work out, and it's all my fault. I was a terrible employee. I showed up everywhere late. I slept with everybody in the office. I was surly. And I got fired from about three jobs in a row. And finally, I thought, oh, well, I guess I have no choice but to be a potter. And at the time, think about a potter. It's like you're stuck in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Yes.
And typically you're just sort of hawking your wares at a rain-soaked craft fair.
Yes, I've been there.
And as an unemployable person, I thought, well, I guess that's how I'm going to roll.
How
do they even get that horrible blue-brown glaze that all the potters in Brattleboro? I mean,
I think it's Mulchman's doing.
I think it is.
So how did you go from there to being the design giant and that you are today?
Oh, well, I realized I was so not that, like, hippie craft dude.
Yeah.
I was half Joni Mitchell listening, Birkenstock wearing Harry Potter, and half, like, New York gay design dude.
I hope you were divided vertically, because that would be weird.
And
there's a joke here about the disappointing dates that only your top half was gay, but I won't make it. I have to ask you this question. We usually ask our various artists about their guilty secrets, so for a furniture and home decor designer, this would be it. Have you now or have you ever had any IKEA furniture in your house?
Thank you. That was my question.
I'm thinking. I definitely have in the lean years, and now I surround myself with my stuff, so no.
Really? Do couples, because IKEA, as we talked about in the show, is a place where couples fight. Because they can't decide on what they want. In your stores, do couples come in and fight?
All the time. And my philosophy is that just let the wife decide, please. She knows.
Okay. It is the secret to a happy marriage.
It surely
is. No doubt about that. Works for me.
And like dudes, butt out. When it comes to the gays, all bets are off.
Really?
That things can get. Talk about catty. When they start to disagree on something, whew.
Really? Is there any way of, can you tell which in a same-sex couple has the superior design sense?
It's all in the shoes.
Really?
Absolutely.
So what you do is, like, you check if they're squabbling, they don't know what to get and what this, that. You look down, and the shoes.
And then you choose a size.
Right.
My wife's shoes are always a lot better looking than mine.
I believe it.
This is Roxanne. I'm just dying to know, how did you go from a guy who, you know, is the starving artist and were you in New York or wherever you were? And then did you have some big break, some craft share show or something?
I did. I got my first order from Barney's, actually, when I first started. And then my other big break was opening a store a few years later.
Speaking of stores, I went into your one in Chicago and looked at all your lovely things. You have this manifesto painted on your wall, which we thought was pretty awesome. Do you know about this? Or did they paint it?
As the author of it, I do.
Yes. So it says things, we believe tassels are the earrings of the home. That's good.
They add a little intrigue and glamour.
We believe in being underdressed or overdressed always. I could see, you know, having met people like Tim Gunn, being overdressed as can be classy, to be the only guy in a suit. When is being underdressed cool and classy?
Either way, you just have to be immoderate. Like, dress like a slut or a mogul, but don't dress like a mid-level regional sales manager ever.
Jonathan, this is PJ. I am a huge fan. I have two big black lamps of yours from back in the day when one could afford one of your lamps.
They're still affordable. Everybody who's listening, race to my website or stores. They're affordable.
Okay, good. I am glad to hear that.
If someone had asked me, who do you know? Who on this earth is a huge fan of Jonathan Adler? I would have gone through every other person on earth before I got to you.
I thought you
were all like mahogany and leather and gun racks. I didn't realize you were into fabulous New York design.
I like his lamps.
All right.
he's really good.
He's multifaceted.
Apparently. Yeah.
I really like mid-century design, and he was one of the guys who brought it back, and he brought it back. He does a lot of fluted shapes on the sort of...
PJ, let's see your shoes.
Well, Jonathan Adler, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
We know you love it, so we're changing it.
It was exactly 30 years ago this month that the Coca-Cola Company introduced New Coke, which is legendary as the most disastrous and most successful product launches of all time. We're going to ask you three questions about the strange but true saga of New Coke. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Bill, who is Jonathan Adler playing for?
Carlos Tilbury of Overton in Hampshire, England.
Goodness gracious.
Woo.
Now, Jonathan, your husband Simon Dunham was on the show.
Yeah.
And how did he do?
He did really well, but I am going to do better than him.
All right. Here we go, Jonathan. Here's your first question.
Okay.
The day New Coke was introduced, that was April 23rd, 1985, it quickly became a holiday to whom? A, the American Dental Association, who anticipated lots more work for their members. B, Pepsi, which gave all employees the day off to commemorate their victory over their rival. Or C, the Anti-Defamation League, because they knew from now on the date would be remembered for something worse than being Hitler's birthday.
This is real? One of them is true?
One of them is true.
Whoa. That is crazy. All right, let me think. You know what? I'm going to go with Pepsi.
Yes, you are right. It was Pepsi. Pepsi saw Coke changing their formula as a sign of their victory in the horrible cola wars that had raged for so long. And they gave all their employees a day off.
Those were tough times.
They were tough times.
Yeah, I mean, we all remember them. It's really sad to be brought back to that period.
I know.
It is, yeah.
A lot of veterans of the cola wars just don't want to talk about it.
No.
No. Coca-Cola, second question. Coca-Cola got a lot of grief for the introduction of the new product, including criticism from whom? A, the Queen of England, who said her corgis refused to drink the new formula. B, cocaine users who mistakenly thought someone had changed their Coke recipe. Or C, Cuban dictator Fidel Castro, who said New Coke was a sign of American capitalist decadence.
Oh, I think, what was the one, the Queen?
The Queen of England.
Said one's corgis wouldn't drink it?
She said one's corgis are not amused, presumably.
one's corgis,
Cocaine users who were afraid that their Coke was being changed, or Fidel Castro.
Yeah, I got to go with Castro on this one.
Yes, it's Castro. Castro apparently really likes Coca-Cola, and he really didn't like the new stuff.
No, he was Team Pepsi. Everyone knows that.
Everyone knows that. Let's see if you can go for perfect. Did Simon get 3 out of 3?
No way.
Oh, so if you get this right, you will, in fact, beat him. This is good. After they restored the old formula, reintroducing it, as we all remember, as classic Coke, some people were still angry at Coca-Cola, including whom? A, the woodworking community, who had found that New Coke made a great light-duty adhesive. B, then-President Reagan, who liked pairing New Coke with his favorite jelly beans. Or C, Bill Cosby, who said that Coke retreating made him look dishonest.
Huh. Woodworkers using it as adhesive?
Yeah.
I'm a craft person. I don't ever use New Coke as adhesive. I am going to go with Bill Cosby.
You're right, Bill Cosby.
Yeah, good.
Bill Cosby had gone on TV. Bill Cosby had gone on TV at the request and payment of Coke, talked about how great New Coke was, and when they withdrew the product and went back on their word, he quit being a spokesman because he said it destroyed. He said something like, I can't imagine anything that would be a greater blow to my credibility and reputation. Bill, how did Jonathan Adler do on our quiz?
Jonathan, you got the best record in the last year on this test. Congratulations.
Well done, Jonathan.
3-0.
Jonathan Adler is an award-winning designer with over 25 stores around the world. You can check him and his work out at jonathanadler.com, especially these adorable animal-shaped matches holders, which I thought were just fabulous.
Thanks,
Jonathan Adler, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. So
take care, Jonathan.
I like to teach the world to sing with me.
I like to buy the world of Coke and keep it company.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is supported by Squarespace, providing creative tools for individuals and businesses to create a website. Squarespace includes hosting, 24/7 customer support, domains, e-commerce, and more. Squarespace enables people to share their stories, show their photographs, and sell their products and reflect who they are online. Visit squarespace.com/wait for a free trial.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and we are playing this week with PJ O'Rourke, Brian Babylon, and Roxanne Robertson. Here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much, Bill. Thanks, everybody. And with the 16th pick in this year's draft, the San Francisco 40-rimers select Bill Curtis.
Aww.
That's the Listener Limerick Challenge coming up. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, President Obama hosted Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, as I'm sure you know, at a state dinner. And in his honor, the president toasted Japan and thanked Japan for the gift of what?
Sake.
No.
Can I get a hint?
Well, when he said this, he showed, to indicate his amusement, a big smiling face on his phone.
Emojis.
Yes, he thanked the Prime Minister of Japan for the gift of emojis to the world, and manga, and karaoke as well. All right, no offense to Japan, fine country, but if the President of the United States is toasting your country at a state dinner, and that's the best praise he can come up with, don't you think you guys better step it up? You know, try to come up with something that isn't annoying.
Why is that annoying?
Well,
people want words.
Mainly because I am old and cannot make out what the damned things are.
I know, but it's sort of like being like an Indiana Jones archaeologist, where you're like looking at like hieroglyphs.
Hieroglyphs were. I'm just imagining Indiana Jones like staring at an ancient, you know, stele and saying, "I don't know what this ancient civilization was interested in, but it involves smiling piles of poop."
I don't think it's fair to blame Japan because. The happy face, I'm pretty sure, started
No,
here.
The happy face, that's an emoticon, that's different. The emoji are those little pictures that are all the rage.
No, I understand that, but aren't they basically in the same DNA?
Like the original emoji was like a happy face, and then it got out of hand.
Yeah.
Like, it was like happy face with heart eyes.
And then they got happy butt.
And happy
then they
butt, got, and then happy poo face, and then a dolphin, and then puppies, and then a drumstick.
The Prime Minister got back at Obama for thanking America for providing Japan with the Kardashians, heart disease, and syphilis. Brian, Stephen Hawking, the world-famous scientist, was the first man to theorize the existence of black holes. Well, in his latest discovery, he says that there might be, an alternate universe in which what is true?
Give me a hint.
I'll give you a hint. In the grand universal theory of everything, there is more than one direction.
It's nothing to do with that boy band.
It does have something to do with that boy band.
No. In another universe, Zach is still in One Direction?
Yes, it's Zane, but I'll give it to
Zane?
You. Zane Malik. Yeah. Stephen Hawking theorized that there could be another universe in which Zane Malik is still in One Direction. During a Q&A with an audience in Cambridge University, Hawking said there may be many universes other than our own, and in one of those universes, Zayn Malik never left that boy band.
You can say that about the Backstreet Boys, Michael Jackson, anything.
Wouldn't it be awful if this alternate universe theory turned out to be true and we were able to travel to these alternate universes and they all had terrible boy bands?
All had terrible boy
bands. Or even worse, what if there was only one alternate universe and we went there and the only difference was Zayn Malik was still in One Direction? We're here in another dimension in which... That's it? PJ, the search for two missing women who have been lost in the woods of northern Michigan for 2 weeks is finally over. They're safe and sound. They were able to survive in the woods, in the snow, on what?
Gee, Peter, I have not got a clue. Snow and wood?
If only. We'd all be better off. No, their camping kit contained Do-si-dos, tagalongs, thin mints.
Girl Scout cookies.
Yes, Girl Scout cookies. They survived 2 weeks, by eating slowly so as to savor them 8 boxes of Girl Scout cookies. Weirdly, they couldn't figure out how to get out of the woods or signal for help or start a fire, so it proves that eating Girl Scout cookies does not give you the power of Girl Scouts. Pity that. We know, we guess, what really happened here. They probably could have made their way out, but they realized they had a great excuse to just sit around and eat nothing but Girl Scout cookies.
Like, and all that nature and the views. That's and
awesome.
The cookies.
It's like, hey, I can see the Walmart. Hush, Pam. We are lost. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website. That's waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our June 25th show in Houston. Yes, we're coming to Houston. Also, be sure and check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, we tell you how to solve a medical crisis with bacon.
Which caused the medical crisis.
Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello. Daniel from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hey, Daniel, how are you?
You know, I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty fine. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us. So, Daniel, yeah. What are you doing in Grand Rapids?
I am a financial coach for Goodwill Industries.
You're a financial coach for Goodwill Industries?
I am.
So people come in, they're using Goodwill's help to get back on their feet, and you talk to them about how to handle their money and stuff?
Exactly.
I'm a big fan of Goodwill. Not only can you buy really nice used clothes, which is why I am the fashion maven that I am.
Well, yeah.
But everybody there is so incredibly nice.
Well, that's good to hear.
It is. Welcome to the show, Daniel. Bill Curtis is going to read you 3 news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in 2 of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready
to
play?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Here's your first limerick.
The soft ash gray cotton's a set chance for fashion designers to get grants. With emoji-themed prints, they're no good for wind sprints. I'll get comfy and cute, trendy.
I'm lost. I don't know.
Soft cotton?
Everybody wears them on airplanes.
Underpants?
What?
Underpants?
Not underpants, although I think everybody does. I hope everybody does. Any more guesses?
No more.
How about sweatpants?
Ah, sweatpants.
Cute, trendy sweatpants. Google recently used their analytics to determine spring's hottest fashion trend. What are people searching for in clothing? And the answer is sweatpants.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
If you're using search data to decide what's fashionable, you are not fashionable. Now, the sweatpants people are searching for, we should let you know, are not like the ratty stuff I wear, but high-end designer sweatpants, the kind you wear when you're eating a frozen lean cuisine alone in Paris or Milan.
No, there's these new, like, you know, sweatpant pants that have, like, sweatpants material.
Yeah.
But they have, like, belt buckles and pockets.
Yeah.
And you can, like, wear them, and they hug your bottom so hot.
You're saying your derriere looks very good in them.
I mean, that could be in a garbage bag. But I'm saying... I'm saying these pants are cut like slacks versus like, you know, athletic.
So they're sweat pants. Slacks.
They're sweat slacks, yeah.
Okay.
This is a man with butt pride.
Hey.
Here, let's move on. Here is your next limerick.
The farm fresh eggs make my pulse quicken. Thoughts of owning a bird leave me stricken. But my worries decrease because my poultry is leased. Month by month, I am renting a...
chicken.
Yes!
Chicken it is.
Rent a chicken.
Rent a chicken?
The Pennsylvania company Rent the Chicken is offering short-term chicken rentals. You know, just like in that old phrase, why would you buy the cow when you can rent the chicken? For about $150 a month, you get 2 chickens and you get a coop and you get all the eggs they shoot out. Now, when you're at the rental counter... Yeah, when you're at the rental counter, you probably want to go for the full-size chicken... Because the compact is just a single buffalo wing. Here, Daniel, is your last limerick.
Since we're not stitching cowhides together, our bags aren't distressed by the weather. There's a uniform grab to stuff made in a lab. Thanks to cloning, we've grown seamless.
Leather?
Leather, yes, good leather. You have heard, of course, and probably enjoyed lab-grown meat, but now scientists are working on lab-grown leather grown from a single bovine cell. It has the texture and feel of real leather, but no cows have to sacrifice their lives. You can grow it in any shape you want, a purse, a pair of shoes, a suitcase, leather pants, or, if you just want to be tricky about it, a cow.
So if will they like clone up like some fur, and then I can see like someone wearing fur, and then those PETA people try to like paint the thing. Hey, man, this is made in the lab, punk.
Yeah, exactly.
That's lab mink.
That's lab mink.
Lab mink. They'll probably be.
You go with that, Brian, quietly while I talk to Daniel.
Okay.
Bill. Bill, how did Daniel do in our quiz?
He did great. Daniel got 2 out of 3, and that is a win.
Well done. Thank you, Daniel. Thanks for playing.
Definitely. Thank you.
I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
BJ and Roxanne have 3, and Brian has 2.
All right. So, Brian, you are up first.
Okay.
The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. This week, the Nigerian army rescued over 200 girls who have been kidnapped by blank.
Boko Haram?
Right. A man suspected of a string of car break-ins was arrested in Naples, Florida, while blanking.
While tweeting.
No, while wearing a shirt that read, "Warning, I do dumb things." This week... Hawaii state legislature passed a bill that would raise the legal blanking age
smoking.
To 21. Yes, smoking. SNL cast member Cecily Strong of Oak Park, Illinois, received generally positive reviews as the host of this year's blank.
The zibbity-bops. I don't know.
The White House Correspondents' Dinner. The Iowa State Capitol building was evacuated on Monday after a member of the state Senate blanked.
Too easy.
State Senate, I don't know, farted.
No. Left their mac and cheese in the microwave too long. Members of Iowa's state government were understandably concerned when an alarm forced the evacuation of the Capitol building on Monday, but an investigation by the fire department quickly discovered the cause, one hungry senator or staffer's charred bowl of mac and cheese.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Bill, how did Brian Babylon do in our quiz?
Brian got 2 right for 4 more points. He now has 6 and the lead.
Well done, Brian.
No, no.
We have flipped a coin. PJ has elected to go last. So, Roxanne, you're up next. Fill in the blank. This week, emergency crews in Nepal continued rescue efforts following the blank that hit the country last Saturday.
The earthquake.
Right. After weeks of scrutiny, the head of the Clinton Foundation admitted that it made mistakes in how it disclosed blank.
Donors and taxes.
Yes. This week, California Governor Jerry Brown raised the maximum fine for anyone caught blanking to $10,000.
Illegally using water.
Right. During a speech on Wednesday, blank called for equal pay in the workplace.
The Pope.
Yes. A man in the UK was arrested for being drunk in public after he blanked.
He ate a muffin.
He confused a police car for a taxi and asked the officers to take him home. During an interview with Diane Sawyer, former Olympic athlete blank came out as transgender.
Bruce Jenner.
Right. This week, the Russian Federal Space Agency announced that it lost control of a rocket that was bringing supplies to blank.
The space station.
Right. An accused drug trafficker in Virginia was able to flee authorities after placing his ankle monitor on his blank.
Dog.
So close. His cat.
Oh!
Dog wouldn't work. Dog would follow him. Dogs love you. Cat works. Cat doesn't care. Cat wanders off in its own direction. Anyway, when the monitor began to act up, they thought it was just a malfunction. But then when it showed that the man was desperately chasing a laser pointer, they decided to investigate.
How did they find out?
I don't know. Presumably they were looking at the results and going,
no, it never moved.
I was going to say, hey, that guy has been in that sunny spot on the floor
all day
for 11 hours.
Bill, how did Roxanne do in our quiz? Pretty well as per usual, am I right?
Very well. She got 6 right. For 12 more points, she has 15 in the lead.
All right.
Oh,
how
I
many
surrender.
Then? How many then does PJ need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win.
Here we go, PJ.
For the game.
On Tuesday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on whether same-sex couples have the right to blank.
Marriage.
Yes, according to an internal review, NBC has reportedly found over a dozen instances where suspended anchor blank embellished the truth.
Brian.
Williams?
Yes, on Sunday, Saudi Arabia resumed airstrikes against Iranian-backed rebels in blank.
Yemen?
Yes. A teenager visiting India learned you should never blank a monkey.
Spank a monkey.
No, you should never give the monkey the finger. The monkey dropped down and kicked him. This week, Gene Nidich, founder of the popular diet program Blank, passed away at 91.
Weight Watchers.
Yes, in an effort to get chess added to the Winter Olympics, the International Chess Federation says it will blank.
Yeah, play chess downhill at about 70 miles an hour.
No, that would be more interesting. They say they will play chess with pieces made of ice.
I see.
The Olympic Charter says winter sports must be played on snow or ice. So the Chess Federation says they'll play with ice pieces. The Olympic Charter also says sports must be sports. Bill, did PJ do well enough to win?
Well, he got 4 right for 8 more points, and he got 11. So we crown Roxanne one more time.
One more time.
Queen.
One more time.
Now.
This episode of Wait, Wait and this message are made possible by A24, presenting Ex Machina, the provocative new sci-fi thriller that has audiences and critics seduced. Manola Dargis of the New York Times calls it a critic's pick, a futuristic shocker about men, the machines they make, and the women they dream up. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone declares, "You've never seen anything like it." Ex Machina, now playing everywhere. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our intern is Jean Nettie Pot Harris Courts. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to John Zajac and Lestal Archick. And, of course, Gary Yek at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Miles Dernboss. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog, and the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the surprise out of the big fight this weekend? PJ O'Rourke.
They both get expelled for fighting.
That would be a surprise. Roxanne Roberts.
Instead of punching each other, the fight will consist of the two men throwing bags of money at each other until one of them is buried in cash.
And Brian Babylon.
Turns out they were holograms the whole time.
Well, if any of those things happen, we will ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Brian Babylon, Roxanne Roberts, and Mr. PJ O'Rourke. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.